If you're a regular listener to the Joy Cardine Show, you know what that music means. It means it's time for the Week in Review. It must be Friday. This hour, we take a look at the week's top news stories from a couple of different perspectives and from yours at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The email talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. 800-642-1234. Here are my guests. Michelle Litchens is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Michelle, good to talk to you this morning.
Good morning, John.
And Spencer Black is also with us. He's a former Democratic state representative from Middleton. He is national vice president of the Sierra Club and an adjunct professor of urban planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and a columnist for the Capital Times. Spencer, good morning to you.
Good morning, John, and good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Okay, so now we've established that it's a good morning. Excellent start. Excellent start. We're already in agreement. Yeah, it's going to be a beautiful day in Wisconsin, and I intend to do a little grass research later today. It was a very eventful week in the presidential race, especially on the Republican side. So let's get started with that. Donald Trump cruised to victory, no pun intended, in the Indiana primary over Ted Cruz and John Kasich, prompting those two to suspend their campaigns. Cruz bowed out that night. Kasich exited the next day. So Donald Trump appears to be the last man standing and will likely get the Republican nomination. Michelle, you're not a Trump fan. You told our producer, Bill Martins, that you felt like you got kicked in the gut. How are you feeling about it today?
Oh, it hasn't really changed yet. You know, there are five stages of grieving. I think I'm still in the beginning of those stages. And it's amazing whenever you run into people I don't even know, but that know that I'm political. Yesterday I was at a function for my daughter's school and had these parents just stop me and look at me. They're like, what are we going to do? You know, it's going to take some time for us to, I was very thankful of what Congressman Paul Ryan said when, you know, he said that Donald Trump is going to have to earn our support. I've been a politically active since I was literally in grade school. I started knocking on doors. And so to think that we have someone who is going to be the Republican nominee that doesn't really represent my core principles, that's just unnerving. It makes you very uncomfortable. And I'm very disheartened by the whole thing. And I know I'm not alone out there. So I think it's going to take a lot of people some time. But again, we're putting the onus on Donald Trump to prove to us that he does represent the principles of the Republican Party, and we have yet to see that.
Spencer Black, I'll take your take on this as well.
Well, it's not often I express sympathy for my Republican colleagues, but in this case, I feel their pain. They are in an interesting spot. You know, Paul Ryan put out the statement yesterday, but there was a lot of wiggle room in it, and I think maybe I heard a little in Michelle's comments as well. The real test will be whether the Republicans are willing to stand up and say Donald Trump may be the nominee of our party, but he doesn't represent America, and we're going to put our country first before our party and not support Trump, or whether Republicans, after a little consternation, come around and support Trump, even if reluctantly. So we're really going to see a test for the Republican Party. Republican Party the party of Trump or not? And are Republicans willing to stand by their principles, or are they going to essentially fold and fall in line with Trump, even if they do it reluctantly?
Michelle, a couple of follow-ups to you, if I may. First of all, what specifically makes Trump a poor choice in your view? And then secondly, do you have concerns about the effect on down-ballot races in Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, at first, I don't believe the man has the character to be president. If he would have been in my son's school or one of my kids' schools and said what he did, he'd be spending the year in the principal's office. You can't just say what he says about other people and expect to be respected. You know, you need to respect other people. You need to act like an adult, especially if you want to be the leader of the free world. He's an embarrassment most of the time. I also disagree with them. I don't believe that Republicans, or I believe Republicans believe in free trade, and he's out there as an advocate against that. I don't believe most Republicans want to stop immigration to this country. No Republican in their right mind would say every Muslim, you know, should be, shouldn't be allowed in this country, or we should, you know, put an extra watch on every Muslim in this country. That's absolutely ridiculous. We're the party that stands for religious freedom. So there are so many issues that he says out loud that the Republican Party does not agree with. And so to Spencer Black's point, which I think he makes a good one, what are Republicans going to do? And if Donald Trump does not start saying that either he was incorrect with some statements that he made or, you know, starting to clarify exactly what he means and so that it does align with the Republican principles, you know, there are a number of people out there like Bill Kristol and Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska talking about a third-party candidate, someone that we can support because we do agree with their principles. And when they bring up that idea, you know, John, to your point about hurting the down-ballot candidates, we need to make sure that conservatives turn out to the polls this fall. And if Donald Trump does not change his tone and does not start to sell his policies as something, again, that aligns with the Republican principles, maybe a third-party candidate is the right way to go so that we can guarantee that our voters, the people who believe in the, you know, conservative philosophy, do turn out to vote. Otherwise, we might see an effect. I don't believe we're going to see as much of an effect at the state level, and we already have a number of elected officials, Republicans, who won in districts that are that Barack Obama won as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it would affect us as much there, but I really do think it will affect our U.S. Senate candidates and our congressional candidates.
Spencer, as a Democrat here, what kind of odds do you give Trump for winning in November?
I think his odds are small, although I think it's wrong for Democrats to pop the champagne bottles just yet. You have to run a campaign, and Trump has surprised a lot of people, including myself, in terms of winning the Republican nomination. You know, what Michelle says, I think she makes sense, but the question is just changing some of his positions. I mean, if he changed positions like that, I think he would basically disqualify himself as someone who no one knows what he stands for. And the things that did attract Republican voters, his strong positions, if he all of a sudden changes them, I think that will have a very negative effect. But it goes beyond that. You know, this guy has a lifetime of character and temperament. And we're not talking about, you know, someone who's going to be a teacher or even a U.S. senator. You're talking about the one person in the world who has their finger on the nuclear button. And it's not exaggeration to say it's the person who can literally blow up the world. And you want someone with the temperament and personality of Donald Trump holding the nuclear codes and having that power. You know, he can change his positions, but as the saying goes, a leopard can change his spots. And his basic temperament, his style, his personality, his life over the last, you know, 40 years, that you can't change in a few months. And that's what I think the American people are going to evaluate. And I think that's why he will be very soundly defeated in November.
Michelle, what chances would you give Donald Trump this fall?
You know, I honestly think it's about 50-50. I don't think that we have really had a chance to vet Hillary Clinton. And that part will be interesting to watch if you put Donald Trump up next to Hillary Clinton. But I think it's important to realize why Donald Trump is where he is. I don't believe people voted for him. And remember, he did not get a majority of the Republican votes out there. It was just the plurality for many states. He barely got to 33% of the votes. So it was enough to win the delegates in that state, but it certainly wasn't a majority. But the electorate this year is just very angry, and on the Republican side especially, people are angry. And so they had two different choices. They could go with someone who was part of, I don't want to say the establishment, but they've been part of the process, and they said they wanted to make a change. But then you could also go with someone who was a complete outsider who said they wanted to make a change. And when you look at the numbers, you know, I mean, a substantial number of evangelicals were supporting Donald Trump. So I believe when it comes to maybe changing, I don't want to say changing what he believes necessarily, but I believe a lot of the voters on the Republican side were just so mad, and they just want someone to fix it, someone to do what they say that they're going to do, which they believe Donald Trump would do. But I believe they were voting for him more for that reason than what he said. So I do think he would have an opportunity to perhaps redefine his principles a little bit and soften himself up. But at the same time, I still leave him with a 50-50.
Okay. Well, we have a Trump supporter on the phone, so let's take this call and find out what Tim in Minocqua has to say. Tim, you have the floor.
All right. I just think you guys are way off base. I think he has been selected by the voters, and he's who they want. I mean, I don't know why you don't get behind him. I mean, he's going to win this election.
Well, there's a percentage of the voters that wanted him, but obviously not a majority of the voters wanted him. So, and after every primary happens, obviously the people who did not get their choice, you know, it takes a little while. There were 40% of Hillary Clinton supporters who said they were not going to support Barack Obama, and they obviously came around in 2008. So it will take some time, but again, Donald Trump is not your typical Republican candidate. And again, I mean, I don't believe he ever voted in a Republican primary in New York State. So when he ran as a Republican, but I can't say he necessarily represents the Republican philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim, the caller, is right. Trump won in the Republican primary process, nomination process, in a process that in many ways was biased against him. So he does deserve credit for that. But the primary electorate, especially the Republican primary electorate, is a relatively small part of the country and a small percentage of the people who will vote in the general election in November. Far more people vote in November than voted in these primaries. And at that, as Michelle correctly pointed out, Donald Trump very rarely exceeded 50% or even 40% in most of those contests. So he won largely because he had a very diffuse field running against him. There were 17 candidates who started out.
Mm-hmm.
But one point I think that I disagree with Michelle on, she said Hillary Clinton hasn't been vetted. She has been vetted, and she's not a very popular figure. Her popularity is probably less than her unpopularity. But, I mean, she's been in the public eye for a long time, and I think people have their opinion made up, pro or con, on her. I don't think there's going to be that much more. But I think Donald Trump is going to get a lot more vetting now. People are going to, first of all, evaluate whether they want him as a guy running our foreign policy and with the power of nuclear war. They're going to start taking a much closer look at his business career. They're going to look at his personality and also evaluate some of his plans. I mean, when you look at his economic plans, where he's going to supposedly cut taxes, put a lot more money in the military, and pay off the debt, people are actually going to start looking at those things a little more seriously, and he's going to have to defend them. And they're really not defensible positions. He can't just say he's going to do great and everything's going to be wonderful. So I think we're going to have a lot more vetting of Donald Trump. People are just learning about this guy as a potential president. Hillary Clinton, whether you love her or hate her, she's been out there a long time, and I think people pretty well know her, for better or worse.
Tim, if you're still there, I was hoping you'd make your case for Donald Trump. Why do you think he is a good choice? Why should people be supporting him?
He's a successful businessman. He's actually done something in his life, which the politicians really haven't done anything in their life. They've been politicians. They haven't accomplished anything, so to speak. If we could put a regular politician in there, like Cruz, just a fast-talking slick politician, we're just going to get four more years of the same, no matter who went, Republican or Democrat. You're going to get the same old thing. You got to get somebody new, something different.
Okay. All right, Tim, we get it. Michelle Litchens, this speaks to the point that you made earlier. People are looking for somebody who's not part of the current process because they're really unhappy with the way things are being run.
They are. And he, again, made his my point, that it's not an issue that Donald Trump is saying that he's going to address when he's there. He's just not the status quo because people are angry. You know, one thing, though, that, again, after being elected, I had run a business for years before I was elected. Government is not a business. To be successful in a business, you need to expand your customer base and grow. And for conservatives, that is the antithesis of what we want to happen in government. And again, after even talking to Senator Ron Johnson, who ran a business, government is the most frustrating entity out there. The bureaucracy is so huge that to try to make a change, it takes a very, very long time to do so. So, you know, when we hear people say we need a businessman in there, I can tell you it's not quite that easy, even as someone who believed that very strongly when I first ran for the state assembly. But he, again, Tim made that point that people were supporting Donald Trump, not necessarily because they agreed with him on some issues. They just want a change.
Spencer Black, over to you, because Hillary Clinton certainly can't wear the outsider mantle. Is that a liability for her in the general election? She represents Washington, and Trump can run against that.
Well, Trump will run against that, but I think that people will, in the end, look at who do they really trust to have that office. And when they look at what Donald Trump is proposing and look at his temperament, I think it's going to be negative. I think the other thing about Trump, Tim mentioned he was a successful businessman. As this gets a little more investigation, which I hope it will, and as he's forced to, for example, release his tax returns, which he's not done, people will find out, first of all, he's a lot less wealthy than he is. Secondly, he hasn't been especially successful. He inherited $250 million. He comes from a very wealthy family. And, you know, if he just put that money in a bank or a 401k account, he would actually have more money than he has. So the reality is that he's a fellow who's gone bankrupt four times, and he inherited a lot of money. As has been said about him, he's a guy who was born on third base and acts like he hit a triple.
Mm-hmm. John?
Yeah.
Just to add to that, it's interesting that Spencer had made the point about trusting someone, because I believe the reason why Hillary Clinton is not doing as well as perhaps she's hoping she would be is because Democrats say they don't even trust her. So it will be interesting comparing these two come this fall, because if Republicans don't trust Donald Trump and the Democrats don't trust Hillary Clinton, who is going to be the next president?
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we have more phone calls. We'll go through those and talk a little bit of politics on the Democrat side as well. There's room for you at 800-642-1234. You can always send us an email, talk@wpr.org. It's the Week in Review. Michelle Litchens and Spencer Black, my guests this hour. And we'll be back with more with them in just a moment. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Joy's back on Monday. This is the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Joy Cardine today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This being Friday and being the 8 o'clock hour, it's time for our Week in Review. We're looking at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. My guest, Spencer Black, former Democratic State Representative from Middleton. He's a columnist for the Capital Times and an adjunct professor of urban planning at the UW-Madison. He's also the National Vice President of the Sierra Club. And Michelle Litchens is also with us. She is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Well, we're talking a lot of politics this hour, which no surprise given what year this is and what time of the year. Let's take another phone call here. Mark is with us in New Berlin next. Mark, thanks for joining us on the Joy Cardine Show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I generally vote Republican, although not 100% of the time by any means. I really am dislike Donald Trump, but I'll tell you what, I can't, like you said before, I can't trust Hillary Clinton. I think she lies. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do if I can hold my nose hard enough to vote for Donald Trump and not get the smell. I probably will. A third party would be disastrous. That's how Ross Perot got Bill Clinton elected. I don't like anything Hillary stands for. I sure as heck don't like what happened in Benghazi. I'm a veteran, and I think that Americans were killed. The government didn't do anything about it, and they lied to us about it. That's my comment.
Mark, let me just ask you this before we go to our panelists here. What if Donald Trump chose a conservative running mate, somebody that you liked?
I don't really think the vice president worth anything, you know, except for those few times when they've ascended to office. The vice president's kind of a figurehead and a safety net for the government.
Okay. All right, Mark in New Berlin doesn't like Trump, likes Hillary less, doesn't trust her. Spencer Black, let's go to you first on this one. Is this a problem for Hillary, the whole trust issue?
Well, yes, it is. Her unfavorables are higher than her favorables ratings. But I don't think those are going to get worse because people pretty well know her. But I think also she has a lot of experience. Everybody agrees she's competent, and she's not dangerous. And Trump is scary. There'll be some Republicans like the caller who may come home to Donald Trump who don't like Hillary Clinton. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is someone who people can see as competent. They're not inspired by her, for example, as they were by Barack Obama. But I think they see her as competent and a fairly safe choice to represent the United States to the world. She did a good job as Secretary of State, by and large. She has experience as a senator. And also on many issues, she has views that represent the interests of the middle class of this country. So I think that people will, if not love her, like her enough to have her beat Donald Trump. If she faced a tougher candidate on the Republican side, I think she'd be in a lot of trouble, quite frankly. But she has perhaps a good fortune of having Donald Trump being her opponent, and I think she'll win quite decisively in November.
Michelle Litchens, something that Mark said I wanted you to respond to, because you talked about possibly Republicans who don't like Trump forming a third party. Mark thinks that's a disaster, but he's hinting that he probably would hold his nose and vote for Trump if those were the choices he had.
Well, it would be a disaster in the sense that you're right, a Republican would likely not win the White House because it would be a repeat of what happened with Ross Perot. But if you don't believe that Donald Trump is qualified to be president, then it's not necessarily disaster keeping him out of the White House, although it is making it easier for Hillary Clinton to get herself there, although most of the country doesn't trust her either. You know, what a sad year. And hearing what Mark says, you are going to see repeated with, you know, millions of people across the country right now. Why are we subjected to voting for the lesser of two evils? That's not what we should be doing, you know, what we should be, or the two candidates we should be cheering on and getting excited about and asking serious questions of. We should be able to rally behind one of the candidates to vote for this November. And this is just sad. It makes you think, should the Republicans at their convention, I'll be there this year, should they just stir up the pot and nominate somebody else from the floor, change the rules? And then, I mean, obviously you're going to see a large group of the Republican Party frustrated because they did support Donald Trump, but at least you'd be doing the right thing by the principles of the party. And, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. But obviously what Mark is talking about, he's not the only one out there saying that.
All right, let's take another call about Donald Trump, and then I want to switch gears here and talk about the Democratic side because a lot of news to cover there as well. Walter is with us in Holman. Walter, go ahead.
I have a question for Spencer. My question is, Spencer, you brought up the fact that Donald Trump inherited millions of dollars from his father. If he would have invested that, he would have more money than if he would have invested that in business. And I guess I'm a little perplexed by that. I mean, you know, we have a country, we need to have a strong economy. He didn't selfishly invest that money for himself. He created jobs. There are families that took home a paycheck on a Friday. They were able to put food on their table, gas in their car, make a mortgage payment, a car payment, all those things. Because Donald Trump just didn't simply, you know, sit on the money and wait for, you know, the return on his investment. And I know that we can poke holes in, you know, any group of people. You could probably look at his business and say, oh, you know, there's a failure here and he didn't do this perfectly. But the reality is we need an answer. There are young people, millennials, that need jobs. There needs to be hope going forward. There needs to be some sort of change.
Walter, thanks for the call. Spencer Black, he addressed that to you. How do you respond?
The question was whether Donald Trump was, you know, a successful business fellow. And the reality is his career has been very mixed. Calling Donald Trump selfless, I think, is not something that I would agree with. I mean, he's plastered his name all over the place. He's been very good at self-promotion. Of course, if you invest the money in other companies that create jobs, that also puts people to work. But I do agree with the basic thought that we do need a stronger economy. An economy that works for the middle class. Billionaires are like Donald Trump, are reaping the benefits of an improved economy, and it is not helping the middle class or people who are coming up in the workforce enough. And that's why we need basic change in our tax policy. We need a change in how the wealth is distributed in this country. But Donald Trump is an exact example of the problem. He's someone who is benefited from being extremely wealthy, while the rest of the country, many people in this country, have not done as well. So we do need an economic change, but Donald Trump is not the person to bring that.
Well, we got a call from Johanna in Wautoma who asked why we're not talking about Bernie Sanders. She says he's the only one who has a chance of beating Trump. So, okay, let's talk about that. Bernie Sanders beat Hillary Clinton in Indiana and picked up a net gain of 6 delegates, although he still has a long way to go to catch Hillary Clinton in total delegates. He insists he's going to stay in until the last vote is cast. So, Spencer Black, we'll start with you on this. Is Sanders the Democrats' best chance of beating Donald Trump?
Well, at this point, Hillary Clinton will get the nomination. I personally voted for Bernie Sanders. So it's not because I wanted Clinton to get the nomination, but the reality is, barring some unforeseen and dramatic event, Hillary Clinton will have the delegates to get the nomination. Both Hillary, whether Sanders would run stronger against Trump or not is an open question. The polls show he does better now, but he really has not had the scrutiny that Clinton does. So that's an open question. But the reality is both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, according to polls, a wide variety of polls now, would beat Donald Trump pretty solidly. So Sanders might be able to beat Trump, but Hillary Clinton, I think, will also beat Trump quite soundly.
All right, Michelle Litchens, what do you think?
I think Hillary Clinton is going to be the nominee. It's interesting on the Democratic side, though. I believe there's 520, right, or 540 superdelegates. I mean, they're running neck and neck when you look at the delegate count without the superdelegates. So Bernie Sanders does have a substantial number of supporters out there. I spoke with a Democrat who will not vote for Hillary Clinton. So it'll be interesting to see if the Democrats have some of the same issues that the Republicans have with their own nominee. I believe that's another reason why Bernie Sanders is doing so well among the voters out there. But another issue with Bernie Sanders is that he has so many pie-in-the-sky ideas that he says are fact, and even Hillary Clinton has called him out on them, that you just can't afford all of the ideas that he has. If you were to take every penny of income from the top 1% earners in our country, it would bring you about $600 billion. That doesn't even pay down a third of our debt for a year, a third of our debt payments for a year. And then you would not have any money to go forward in the future. So the ideas that Bernie Sanders is espousing are unrealistic. And if he were to be the nominee of the Democrat Party, you would see those exposed for certain.
All right. Michelle, thank you.
Correct one thing factually is actually, I think Democrats should get rid of superdelegates entirely. But nonetheless, the reality is Hillary Clinton is leading amongst elected delegates by about 320 delegates. So she does have a substantial lead amongst the elected or regular delegates as well as the unelected and superdelegates.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Saeed in Green Bay next. Saeed, thanks for joining us on Week in Review.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I think the entity most likely to run as a third party is Bernie Sanders. And, in fact, the entity most likely to win as a third party is Bernie Sanders. I don't know what alternate universe one of your guests lives in that says Hillary Clinton did a good job in form as a Secretary of State. The shamble in Syria is the consequences of that is breaking up the European Union. I mean, how in the world with a straight face can you say that Hillary Clinton was a good Secretary of State?
We'll go to Spencer Black first and then Michelle Litchens on this one.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders will not run as a third-party candidate. Bernie Sanders has said that Hillary Clinton on her worst day is 100 times better than Donald Trump on his best day. So he's going to be very clearly on the side of Clinton. I hope he is vigorously so. To what extent he goes out and does that is a question. Some of his voters won't vote for Clinton, but I think the polls have shown that most people who voted for Bernie Sanders, especially faced with the prospect of Donald Trump as president, will support Clinton come November.
Michelle Litchens, do you agree with that?
Well, a few points. I think Saeed made a great point. Hillary Clinton was a mess as a Secretary of State. my son's in the military right now, and I can't tell you how nervous I was watching that movie 13 Hours and saying I could not believe that the United States government left people to die in another country and how that makes the mother of a serviceman feel. But his point was very well made about Bernie Sanders if he did run as a third-party candidate. Remember, Bernie Sanders is not elected as a Democrat. He is not a Democrat. He's a socialist. And I do believe his followers would follow him over to a third party, and he would be a viable candidate if he had to break the voters up between three people. I also don't believe that he will choose to go that route, because I do agree with Spencer in his point that he said that he would believe that Hillary Clinton is far better than someone as Donald Trump. And if you did run a third party race, you obviously would, you know, make it more possible for a Republican to win the presidency. So I don't see that could happen, but I think he makes a great point.
Syed, thanks for your phone call. 800-642-1234. We're in our week in review on the Joy Cardin Show. Michelle Litchens and Spencer Black are my guests. We're talking a lot of politics this hour because those are the top news stories of the week. Spencer Black, how concerned are you about the FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State?
I'm not terribly concerned about it. There's an article just this morning in the Washington Post from quoting the FBI folks who are looking at the security issues, saying that basically exonerating Clinton. I think this is primarily partisan. I don't think it was intelligent to you, as Clinton has said, it wasn't a good idea to use a private email server, as she did, and as previous Republican secretaries of state did as well. It's reasonable to look at the security concerns, but I think this is much more partisan effort to blow something up than reality. There's really been nothing come out of this. When the Republicans had a congressional committee hearing on this issue, they were embarrassed by it. And I think especially the story this morning in the Washington Post from the people investigating this, basically exonerating Clinton, puts an end to it.
And Michelle Litchens, do you think that's true? Hillary Clinton going to be exonerated and this is a non-issue?
I don't believe that Barack Obama is going to let the FBI do anything more to Hillary Clinton about this issue, but they should be, and the FBI is doing a lot of investigating completely on their own outside of what Congress has asked them to do previously. Into, you know, former secretaries of state have used private servers a little bit, but not exclusively like Hillary Clinton did. So that's not a fair comparison at all. I believe she actually should be charged. It was ridiculous to know that other governments have been able to get some of our, you know, our information because she was using an unsecured server. And again, I mean, that's going to be an issue that we're going to hear a lot about during the campaign this fall, but I don't believe that President Obama is going to let anything happen with her being prosecuted for any crimes.
I have to disagree with Michelle on this. First of all, the investigation is independent. It's being done by not just by the FBI, but by federal prosecutors who have been very tough in other cases. So there's no indication that this investigation has been tampered with. There's also zero evidence that this private server was hacked or other foreign governments got access to this information. I don't think it's a good idea to use a server of this sort in the future. Probably shouldn't have been done in the past. But the charge that somehow foreign governments got access to this information, there's absolutely zero evidence of that.
All right. Let's take another call. John is with us from Boaz. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, I'm an independent. I voted Democrat most of my life. And independents now are 43% of the voting bloc. Yeah, I believe that's correct. And we're not talking about Bernie Sanders. I know everybody's calling and saying that, but, you know, there's a reason for that. He's getting a little more airtime now, but the open primaries have shown that he can win when people are not restricted from voting. The polls also show that he beats Trump by 14-15%. Hillary is either tied or loses by a point. Now, those are the actual polls. I'm not sure what your expert there is quoting, but...
Hello? I think we just lost John, but I think he had made his point. Bernie, in open primaries, Bernie's done better. I know there are some polls that show the race between Clinton and Trump to be quite close. Spencer Black?
Well, actually, I did a survey of all the polls this morning immediately before the show, and your callers can do it as well on Real Clear Politics website, which is actually a fairly conservative website, except for Rasmussen, which is a largely discredited poll. But looking at actually over a dozen other polls, it's not even close. Clinton has a very sizable lead, not only nationally in the polls, but also state by state in the swing states. So I think your caller is incorrect about the polls. Sanders does do better against Trump right now than Clinton. But I think, as Michelle pointed out, Sanders hasn't been vetted. And I say this as someone who voted for Bernie Sanders. Sanders has not gone through the gauntlet as Clinton has over the last 25 years. And to some extent, Trump hasn't gone through it fully yet either. So I'm not sure the polls would be the same in October as they are now if Sanders was the actual nominee. But I think the one thing Sanders has done is really change the dialogue on the Democratic side. And one of the things I hope he changes is the process. I hope Sanders goes to the convention and succeeds in forcing a change for future nomination contests so we get rid of this very large number of superdelegates or unelected delegates on the Democratic side. I don't think that's healthy for our party.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Litchens, we'll get a quick comment from you, and then we need to go to break.
Sure. I mean, Spencer is absolutely correct. Every poll that I've seen out there, Hillary Clinton is walloping Trump, and then Bernie Sanders is doing better than that. But again, to repeat what Spencer had said, Bernie Sanders has not been scrutinized to the extent that Hillary Clinton has been. The public doesn't really know his history. You know, most people don't know that Bernie Sanders never really had a job until he was 40 years old, where he had a steady paycheck. So when you learn more about Bernie Sanders, I think his negatives would go up a little bit more than where he is right now.
Okay. We need to get to break. When we come back, we have some more phone calls and a lot more stories to try to get to before we get to the end of the program, which is quite rapidly approaching. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on The Week in Review. Michelle Litchens and Spencer Black are my guests. We've got phone callers. And if you get a busy signal, try sending us an email. talk@WPR.org is the address. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our Week in Review. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Joy's back on Monday. Michelle Litchens, small business owner from Elm Grove and former Republican state representative, is one of my guests. The other is Spencer Black, former Democratic state representative from Middleton, vice president of the National Sierra Club, adjunct professor of urban planning at the UW-Madison, and a columnist for the Cap Times. Let's move on to Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race. Republican Senator Ron Johnson officially kicked off his reelection campaign with a tour around the state. He said it's crucial that Congress stay in Republican control, especially considering that the direction of the Supreme Court is on the line. Johnson's being challenged by former Democratic Senator Russ Feingold, who responded to Johnson's announcement by calling him a partisan shill. Polls show Feingold leading the race. Michelle, make the case for Ron Johnson's second term.
I think you can make the case just by how they both announced. Ron Johnson announced at a business that he built, and if you've ever been there, you can see where he's even expanded his building. He announced around family, friends, and all of his employees there. And how did Russ Feingold announce that he's running for the U.S. Senate? By a video that was taped out in California. So those are the two differences. Ron Johnson was elected and went to Washington, D.C., not to be a politician, but to fight for the taxpayers in the state of Wisconsin. So Russ Feingold has brought up the point that Ron Johnson hasn't been back in the state and driven around the state as much as he did when he was elected. And he's got a good point with that, because Ron Johnson hasn't. But Ron Johnson has been fighting to do more for us out in Washington, D.C., to expose government waste. And he's been chair of the Homeland Security Committee, and he's been doing his due diligence there. He has been fighting for the taxpayers in Wisconsin, and I certainly hope that they send him back.
Spencer?
Well, you know, it's interesting that Johnson said that he was going to tour the state. He's been senator for 6 years. Russ Feingold went to every county every year he was U.S. senator without fail. Ron Johnson is all of a sudden discovering that there are people in Wisconsin he has to go talk to them now that he's running for re-election, which he's ignored for the last 5 years. In terms of doing something in Washington, I mean, Ron Johnson is the Washington guy who's been in a Congress that's done nothing. And now he's out there supporting Donald Trump,
So people have to decide whether they want Donald Trump and Ron Johnson or Russ Feingold, who when he was U.S. Senator, he visited and went to every single county in the state, was an independent voice, worked with Democrats and Republicans, like John McCain, a Republican of Arizona, and was a very effective senator. So I think it's a stark choice between Johnson and Trump on one hand or Russ Feingold on the other, and I think the polls reflect that the people in the state are going to give Russ Feingold another shot in the U.S. Senate.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join our program. Let's go on to another story, and this one involves the UW. UW-Madison faculty leaders approved a measure this past Monday afternoon saying they have no confidence in the actions of UW System President Ray Cross and the Board of Regents. The reaction to that in the legislature was swift. A key Republican state lawmaker is calling the University of Wisconsin-Madison faculty's vote of no confidence in university leadership a sign that they are out of touch with most Wisconsinites. We'll start with you first. Michelle, what did you think about this?
I almost couldn't believe that they did that. I mean, they are showing the rest of the state that they are completely out of touch with reality. Those college professors still have much better job protection than anyone else out there working in the state. We were the only state in the country that had tenure in state statute, and so they just moved that to the Board of Regents. They still have tenure protection. This is showing that they are not connected with real people. And, you know, I don't think this is going to help them. Many people in the legislature this last year, most legislators, and we're talking about Republicans here, fought very hard to restore some of the cuts that the governor had originally put in that budget. And I don't think that the professors that voted for this, now we're seeing this start to happen at other universities across the state, I don't think they fully appreciate the perception that they're sending to the state that even though they fought to restore some of those cuts, that they just aren't good enough. So, you even heard Chancellor Blank saying, don't do this. Don't do this. You're going to ruin the goodwill that we're finally able to build. We have another difficult budget coming up in Wisconsin. And, now that they're just kind of slap in the face of the legislature with what they did, they're definitely ruining some of the goodwill, and I just don't think that the professors realize that they look like a bunch of crybabies when they're doing this, because they have much better job protection than anyone else in the state.
Spencer Black?
Michelle mentioned reality. The reality is a strong university is essential, crucial to the future of our state of Wisconsin, the economy. That's where the jobs are, especially the good-paying jobs of the future, are not at the university so much as the businesses and enterprises that are spun off by the university. And we have or had a tremendous asset in one of the best universities in the country. And we're in a very competitive environment. The legislature and the governor cut $250 million from the university. And this was done at a time when virtually every other state in the nation is increasing their investment in their universities. The university environment is very competitive. And the reputation of the university is essential in terms of getting the people here who are going to make our university great and are going to create the jobs, the good-paying jobs of the future, because that's where the employment is going to be and the prosperity is going to be. And the attacks on the university, weakening tenure, weakening faculty governance, cutting the university by a dramatic amount, are totally undermining the reputation of this university here and really killing our competitiveness in this environment. So, the university, some of the folks at the legislature can be spiteful about the university, but they're cutting off their nose to spite their face, because we are going to find that probably the greatest future asset of this state, the University of Wisconsin, and we're a middle-of-the-road state in terms of population and wealth, but we have one of the great universities in this country, but we're not going to have that in the future, and that is going to hurt us for a long, long time to come. So these people at the legislature who are being spiteful and vindictive about professors speaking out, I wish they had spoken out long ago, about how badly the university is being cut, is being hurt, and our reputation is being harmed, are doing the right thing And the people who are attacking the university and undermining the university are really undermining the future of the state of Wisconsin.
We have a caller from Appleton. Mark is on the line who wants to speak to this issue. Mark, quickly, please.
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, the frustration goes far beyond tenure, although people should recognize that tenure is the national standard, and we are having deep trouble. I work for UW. We're having real trouble recruiting and retaining faculty. We're losing them at an alarming rate. And also just the fact that, people really don't know, I don't think the people of Wisconsin know how badly the university has been damaged. We are really, really hurting. It's not just a bunch of crybabies. The faculty are concerned about seeing a great institution being dismantled.
All right, Mark, Michelle Litchin's, Mark's point, this is not about tenure as much as it is about the health of the university.
Well, I don't understand why they necessarily took this vote of no confidence in Ray Cross. Ray Cross was not a part of any of the changes that happened in the legislature. This really gets back to tenure and the changes that the Board of Regents made to tenure, which were very few. And again, we were the only state that had it in state statutes, and the legislature told the Board of Regents that they had to, you know, make their own tenure rules. So, again, I don't know why they're necessarily having a little hissy fit about tenure and having a no-confidence vote in Ray Cross, because if they're angry at the legislature, they should be saying that and not at the Board of Regents.
Let's see. We're just about out of time. Let's go to tourism, because we're just about at the official beginning of the tourism season is Memorial Day. Tourists spent nearly $12 billion in Wisconsin last year, according to a report from the Tourism Department, which was released recently. And tourists spent $11.9 billion in the state in 2015, an increase of $500 million. From 2014, Governor Scott Walker planned several stops around the state to tout that report. Spencer Black, how important do you see tourism to our state economy, and what should the state government be doing about it?
Tourism is a very important part of our state economy, and somewhat like the university, we're playing with fire by undermining our environment. People come to Wisconsin because we're a beautiful state. And we've made an investment in the state in protecting our environment and clean water and protecting our lands. Unfortunately, Governor Walker and the legislature have been undermining environmental protection. We just had a report that many of our waters are becoming polluted. They've weakened standards for protecting our lakes and rivers. They've cut dramatically our fund for protecting our outdoor lands, the stewardship fund. They've eliminated entirely state funding for state parks. We have seen an attack on the environment. So we're now benefiting from what generations of Wisconsinites have done to protect our environment. But this attack on the environment, the undermining of DNR and our system of environmental protection, means that the attractiveness that brings all these tourists here and enhance our reputation, grow our economy, is not going to be there in the future if we don't take care of the environment. So like the university, we've had the environment is one of our great assets in our outdoors, which brings in tourism dollars, just like the university brings in economic development dollars. But we see a systematic undermining of environmental protection,
okay,
and that's going to hurt tourism.
Spencer, we're almost out of time. I need to give Michelle a chance to respond. Michelle, talk about how important the investment in tourism is.
Oh, I think the investment in tourism definitely pays for itself tenfold. I'm always jealous when I see those Pure Michigan ads, because I'm like, our state has more lakes than yours does, and our state is just beautiful. I completely disagree with what Spencer said about weakening environmental standards in the state of Wisconsin. I miss camping at Hartman Creek. I miss going to Minocqua. Now, I will hopefully have an opportunity to get out there and enjoy my weekends again after some time with teenagers. But we have so many places in this state to enjoy, and we're so very fortunate to have such a beautiful place to live.
Spencer Black, Michelle Litchens, thank you both for joining me today. I really appreciate your time on the Weekend Review, and have fun this weekend. Thanks also to Bill Martins and Brianne Chasso and Niaja Ellison for producing this week's programs. It's been my pleasure to sit in for Joy Cardine. She's back on Monday. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.